Today is Sunday, May 18th, 2026. This is your FinTech briefing for professionals in payment engineering, BOSS integration, and embedded finance. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover the structural retirement asset reallocation wave that Mike Green says represents a $35 trillion opportunity, the simultaneous institutional land grab into tokenized money markets by BlackRock, JP Morgan, and Fidelity, and the consumer credit deterioration signals that demand immediate underwriting changes before your sponsor bank forces your hand. Let's start with something that doesn't get enough airtime in fintech circles. The single largest structural shift in U.S. capital allocation in a generation is now mechanically in motion, and it has almost nothing to do with crypto or AI. Mike Green, chief strategist at Simplify Asset Management, which manages $14 billion in assets, laid out the math plainly on Thoughtful Money. Passive funds now represent 53-54% of U.S. equity market share. They've been gaining approximately 4 percentage points per year. And Green's estimate is that the passive factor alone contributed 15% per year to S&P 500 returns over the past 5 years. That's not a small distortion. That is a structural bid built into equity prices that has been fueled, in significant part, by automatic 401k contributions from working Americans. Now, here's the forcing function that every fintech engineer in retirement infrastructure needs to internalize. More than 70 million baby boomers are transitioning out of the workforce between 2025 and 2035. 10,000 retire every single day. The average 401k balance sits somewhere between $250,000 and $400,000. And when those individuals retire, they stop buying equities, they start drawing income, the passive bid reverses. What Green identifies, and this is the product gap that represents the engineering opportunity, is that accessible annuity structures with principal spend-down flexibility do not currently exist at scale. 30-year TIPS are yielding 2.7% real right now. 30-year treasuries are at approximately 5% nominal. Green's words were direct. You can get almost the S&P's historical real return with a guarantee from the U.S. government. The tools to operationalize that for mass-market retirees simply haven't been built yet. For engineers, this is an 18 to 36-month first-mover window before BlackRock, Vanguard, and Fidelity retool their distribution. The technical stack starts with Treasury Direct API integration for bond pricing and auction data, custodian API selection, interactive brokers at 10 to 25 cents per bond for early-stage platforms, Apex clearing for consumer platforms above 10 million in AUM, and critically, RIA registration before any managed account product goes live. State registration below 100 million in AUM runs $500 to $5,000 and takes 3 to 6 months. Federal SEC registration above that threshold requires a written compliance program and annual review procedures. Neither is optional. The DOL fiduciary rule, active since 2025, requires that every 401k rollover recommendation document specifically why the rollover serves the client's best interest versus remaining in the existing plan. That documentation logic must be built into the API workflow at intake, not handled in a post-processing step. Now let's move to the second structural force, because it connects directly to that retirement story in ways that most teams haven't mapped yet. BlackRock, JP Morgan, and Fidelity all simultaneously launched registered tokenized money market products on Ethereum, not pilots, not sandboxes. Live, registered products with institutional capital behind them. BlackRock's Biddle Fund reached $2.5 billion in AUM before its latest fund expansion. JP Morgan launched JLTXX at a 16 basis point management fee. Fidelity brought FILC to market for international exposure. All three settled in USDC. That last detail matters. Circle's Q1 2026 earnings showed USDC on-chain transaction volume up 250% year-over-year, with USDC capturing 63% of total stablecoin volume, despite holding less than 60% of total stablecoin market supply. The implication is velocity dominance. USDC isn't just big, it's circulating faster than competitors. And when three of the largest asset managers in the world simultaneously choose it as their settlement layer, that's an infrastructure endorsement that shapes engineering decisions. The regulatory context here is the Clarity Act. It passed the Senate Banking Committee 15-9 with developer protections intact. Polymarket assigned 69% probability of full passage in 2026. The bill's decentralization standard defines a compliant protocol as open source, permissionless, credibly neutral, with token concentration below 49%, consensus rule governed, and economically independent. Here is the architectural decision gate your team faces right now. Do you build to the Clarity Act's decentralization standard and the activity-based rewards carve-out? Or do you maintain parallel state-by-state money services business licensing? Building exclusively around the Clarity Act before the Senate floor vote introduces regulatory revision risk that cannot be fully hedged. My recommendation is to instrument your token distribution metrics against the 49% concentration threshold today, but do not make irreversible architectural decisions until that vote happens. If Polymarket probability drops below 50%, revert to the MSB licensing strategy without hesitation. One additional signal that engineers building tokenized private company equity products cannot ignore. Anthropic and OpenAI both issued formal statements declaring unauthorized transfers of their equity, including pre-IPO token structures, void. Pre-IPO tokens on Solana dropped 34% for Anthropic and 40% for OpenAI within days. That is not a market correction. That is legal enforcement signal. Unauthorized SPV tokenization structures carry material legal risk, and company transfer restriction rights are being exercised. If your roadmap includes tokenized private equity, you need crypto-specialized legal counsel, firms like Fenwick & West, Cooley, or Anderson Kill, before you write a single line of smart contract code. Budget $10,000 to $25,000 for the initial assessment. Now to the force that demands the most immediate operational response, consumer credit. The Forward Guidance Team, Felix Chauvin, Jack Farley, and Tyler, reported something last week that should be causing emergency reviews of underwriting parameters across every BILL's consumer lending program in this country. 90-day credit card delinquency rates are at cycle highs. Real retail sales are printing negative, meaning nominal retail growth is being entirely consumed by CPI running at 3.8%. April 2026 PPI came in at 6% year-over-year against 4.9% analyst estimates. And the tax refund buffer that had been absorbing consumer spending shortfalls through Q1 is now essentially depleted. David Rosenberg at Rosenberg Research corroborated the picture on Wealthion's open position. Employment is flat in the household survey. One in five Americans fears job loss within 5 years. Barely 40% expect a pay raise this year, with median expected wage growth at 0.4%. And 90% of U.S. GDP growth over the past 2 years derived from productivity gains rather than labor input, versus a historical 50-50 split. That math does not support continued consumer credit expansion. For fintech engineers, the operative risk is model miscalibration. Loss rate models built on 2023 and 2024 data will systematically understate charge-offs in the 2026 and 2027 cycle. Any program with mass-market consumer loss rate assumptions below 6% for borrowers under $75,000 in household income should be treated as miscalibrated today. The revised benchmarks are as follows. For mass-market consumers under $50,000 in household income, revise your base case loss rate from the 3-6% range to 6-10%. For lower middle consumers between $35,000 and $75,000, move from the 4-8% range to 8-14%. For SMB borrowers whose underlying merchant volume is in retail, restaurants, or apparel, move from 3-8% to 8-18%. The one segment where credit availability should actually expand is B2B and upper-income borrowers above $100,000 in household income. Loss rate assumptions of 2-5% remain defensible there. The highest fidelity leading indicator, and this is critical, is authorization decline code monitoring, not bureau delinquency data. Decline code data precedes bureau reports by 4 to 8 weeks. Building a weekly monitoring pipeline that alerts on more than a 10% week-over-week increase in NSF and insufficient funds decline codes gives you a 6 to 8 week runway before that stress shows up in your credit reporting. Use that runway to raise minimum income floors, reduce maximum credit lines, and implement monthly cash flow re-verification on revolving products. The asymmetry here is stark. Early tightening preserves capital. Delayed tightening, when delinquency data materializes in bureau reports, may coincide exactly with sponsor bank covenant reviews and warehouse facility renegotiations, the worst possible moment to be renegotiating underwriting policy. On the sponsor bank question specifically, let me walk through what a standard operating procedure for BAAAS program health verification looks like under current conditions. Darius Dell at 42 Macro projected the Fed pivoting from pricing 3 cuts to 1 hike over the next 12 months. Polymarket's probability of a 2026 Fed rate hike moved from 20% to 28% in a single week. Lance Roberts at Raya Advisors identified that banks are carrying materially more debt at suppressed rates, and that it takes less of an increase in rates now to create economic disruption than it historically has. The Synapse bankruptcy of 2024 established the legal precedent that BaaS middleware failures can strand end-user funds regardless of sponsor bank solvency. Your sponsor bank verification protocol should run quarterly and before any new program launch. Pull the most recent FDIC call report at fdic.gov/bankfind. You're verifying three things: CET1 capital ratio above 10%, commercial real estate concentration below 300% of risk-based capital, and no material net losses in the trailing 4 quarters. Cross-reference active enforcement actions at ffiec.gov/nicpubweb. Any consent order or memorandum of understanding related to BSA/AML deficiencies or third-party risk management is a disqualifying flag for new programs and a material risk flag for existing ones. For nationally chartered banks, cross-reference at occ.gov as well. Also, request from your sponsor bank their current aggregate BAAAS program deposits as a percentage of total deposits. If BAAS program deposits exceed 30% of total bank deposits, that concentration creates regulatory scrutiny risk and potential growth restrictions on your program. Total cost of this protocol: $0 in direct fees and 4 hours of compliance staff time per quarter. The asymmetric risk on the other side: a program freeze requiring 6 to 12 months of emergency remediation at $500,000 to $2 million makes this non-negotiable. And on payment orchestration, as authorization rates deteriorate in a consumer stress environment, multiprocessor smart routing is your primary defensive tool. Deploying an orchestration layer like Spreedly or Primer.io across at minimum 2 primary processors and 1 failover costs $50,000 to $200,000 and takes 3 to 6 months to integrate. At $500 million in GMV, a 2-5% authorization rate improvement from smart routing retains $500,000 to $1.25 million in annual revenue. At $1 billion in GMV, the value is $1 to $2.5 million annually, with implementation cost fully recovered within 60 to 90 days. For your internal initiative recommendation this week, propose a cross-functional underwriting stress test review. Bring together credit, engineering, compliance, and your sponsor bank relationship lead. Run your consumer loan portfolio against the revised loss rate assumptions. Model your warehouse line covenants under a plus 200 basis point delinquency scenario. And document the revised assumptions for board approval before your next origination cycle. That documentation isn't just good risk management under OCC Bulletin 2020-49 and CFPB UDAP obligations. It's the evidentiary record that demonstrates you acted on available leading indicators. That's your FinTech briefing for today. The structural forces in retirement reallocation, institutional tokenization, and consumer credit stress are all accelerating simultaneously, and the teams that build infrastructure for the first two, while actively defending against the third, will define this cycle. Thank you for the time and attention. Keep your eyes on the rails. Talk tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.